In 1492, you came up on the shore. 700 years educated by the Moors. 17th century, genocide and the gun. Middle Passage blessed to market the Africans in the so-called land of God. My kind were treated hard. From back then until now, I see and you agree. We have been a misrepresented people. From back then until now, just see my family tree. We have been a misrepresented people. We have been a misrepresented people.
I can't breathe. can't breathe. I can't breathe. For the 11th time, I can't breathe. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark, and I thank you for taking the time out to tune in, especially this evening. Yes, you are at the right place at the right time, whether you know it or not. Today, we have another program intended to enlighten you and encourage you, inspire you, power you, and as important as anything, to instill you to get involved and take action and make a difference. We all know what's going on mainstream media right now. I would say, doubly, everyone within an earshot of my voice, because my listeners, and I'm proud to say, are informed to a significant degree. And what I'm talking about is the egregious acts that are taking place in mainstream media. On the streets of America, a land supposedly created for the people, by the people, and of the people. I said supposedly. But we don't see that happening. It's supposed to be a land of justice for all. But ends up being just them. Justice for just them. And who are them? Those who are of the descendants of the founding fathers. And so we have to go all the way back to begin to address what's going on. And when I say back, I'm saying back to the inception of this land we call home of the free and the brave. I want to let it be known in the course of this program, as much as it may appear there's a broad brush, it's not, because of course there are exceptions. There are exceptions. In the civil rights movement, the great civil rights movement of the 60s, there were those, of course, who were non-blacks who participated to make it happen for blacks. Going all the way back to the Underground Railroad and even beyond. So I'm not going to claim that we're going to paint a broad brush this evening when we begin to talk about what's happening in the streets of America. But we are going to drill down in a way that you may not have heard on mainstream. So yes, we are going to talk about what's happening. And as always, without any spin, without any influence from political or business interest, we're going to bring it live, we're going to bring it real this evening. And we have a guest that's going to join us that doesn't know how to do it any other way. He's well-versed, he's well-educated, and he's well-researched. So, I'm going to ask everyone to hang on to your seats if you can for 10 minutes because, well, also this evening, we are consistent. It's our evening where we bring on our master pranic healer, our meditation expert, Dr. Glenn Mendoza. So he's going to join us, but for a short time at the top of this show, for about 10 minutes, because Dr. Mendoza has an engagement, and he's going to be joining us in about a minute. And after that, we're going to get into this dialogue about what's happening in the streets of America with a friend of Progressive News Weekly, Taylor. Dr. Eddie Taylor, author of the book Restoring the Minds of Black America, need to be sure to catch this. So right now, we're going to reach out and to get Dr. Glenn Mendoza on. But I do want you, and Dr. Mendoza, just to give you some background, is a medical doctor, practicing for 35 years, but he's also one who practices from a more holistic, integrated approach, and he understands that there's a spiritual aspect to healing. There's an energetic aspect to healing. And so, Dr. Glenn, as he's affectionately referred to, will be talking about the importance of meditation, especially during a full moon. And tonight happens to be, I think it's Saturday that we actually have a full moon. And there are certain attributes, energies that are available with the full moon. And so with that, I just want to lay a little bit of a backdrop for what Dr. Mendoza is going to talk about. This full moon is the full moon of Sagittarius. So if there are any Sagittarius out there, you especially want to tune in. Dr. Mendoza only has about 10 minutes, to join us. And so as we reach out to is he in the back office yet? Looks like we do have him with us now. As I said, Dr. Mendoza will be joining us very shortly. Yes, he is in studio. And he only has a short time because he actually has an engagement. In fact, we're going to talk about that just a bit, where all of you this evening may be able to even join in on a special meditation. So without further ado, let's bring Dr. Glenn Mendoza so that we can get into the second piece of the program and give him the time that he deserves. Dr. Mendoza?
Hey, how are you, Daryl? Good evening again.
Hi. Thank you for taking the time out. I was just explaining that you have a limited amount of time, so we're going to have to get right into the crux. And for those that are interested, tonight's a special night because they can actually pick up on the information that you share with us right on video stream. Am I right?
Video stream is one of the most advanced technology. That means the world is small now, so we are video streaming it, and we could have as many as at one point in time, even up to close to 1,000 people video streaming and meditating at the same time. So that's very good. Normally we have probably between 400, 500 to 750, that kind of thing. That's a normal number that we usually have. And we do meditate because it's the time of the full moon. The full moon is the time wherein the energy of the month is very high. So we take advantage of this energy through meditation, through group meditation, which we have been doing, actually, I realize, since 1994. So we're about 20 years. So what are the reasons for meditating during the full moon? Number one, it's the main reason of meditating is actually blessing Mother Earth. And whatever happens after that is usually positive, all positive. When we do meditate during the full moon, it's like partaking into a spiritual shower. There's a tremendous amount of energy that comes down. It energetically cleanses us, re-energizes us, and we bathe in this energy of like divine energy. And the second thing was that, so it cleanses us, it energizes us, and we use this energy to bless our loved ones, our projects, and Mother Earth. If there are areas on Earth wherein there's calamity, there's a problem, or we could use that as a part of the meditation. And one thing which Daryl and I over years are interested is actually the positive qualities of that specific sun sign on that month. And we absorb, in essence, we absorb some of those positive qualities. And like this month is the month of Sagittarius. From November, I believe it's 22nd until December 21, which is the winter solstice, it's the month of Sagittarius. So that's one reason we do meditate is to, those are the main reasons why we do meditate. And we're having a video stream. If you want to log in, go to pranichealingusa.com. Pranic, P as in Paul, R A N as in Nancy, I C, healing, H E A L I N G, USA.com. And we video stream this throughout the whole world. So we have different people connect from different countries. Daryl wants me to talk usually about what are the positive qualities of the specific sign. I would assume that your listeners have their own birthday and they know what sign they were born. And knowing that, somehow we get to know the qualities we have, the positive qualities and the not-so-positive qualities. But during the full moon, we just focus on the positive. That's what we want to absorb. So by and large, going to Sagittarius, Sagittarius is the half horse, half man, like a centaur. So the qualities they have are, number one, they're perennial optimists. They're perennial optimists. You could give them, always they look at the brighter side. So if you know a Sagittarius, they're always looking
yes,
at the brighter
I do.
Side.
Mm-hmm. And they are optimistic.
A perennial, I would say perennial optimist, they help, it helps them to give their best even in difficult situations. That's one of the characters that they have. Number two was that they're adventurous. As Gemini is a mental sign, they are adventurous in the mental realm or air sign. Sagittarius is adventurous in the physical sense of the word. So they are actually, they want to travel. They travel, they explore, they're athletic. So these are the things that a Sagittarius usually do. What else? They are, by and large, intellectual also, philosophical. Most of the philosophers that we have, most of the wise men, in the strong sense of finding the right and the wrong, they're mostly Sagittarius. They love to exchange views on spiritual matters, and they are basically, in a certain way, also generous and magnanimous. Those are the qualities that the Sagittarius have. And
what was that last one, magnanimous? What was
magnanimous,
the last one?
Yeah, magnanimous. They're magnanimous. They just want to make sure everybody is taken care of. It's a sign usually given to Leo as a king, but Sagittarius, I believe, has that quality. What else? It's a fire element. As I told you, they are highly optimistic. They are great traveler. They are open-minded. Open-minded to as a thinker, particularly the ancient wisdom. And there's a, just a thirst for knowledge of them. So those are the qualities of the Sagittarius, and as I said, they usually, there's a centaur, which is half man, half horse, and there's, they usually have a archery. It involves archery, like I think it's the god Chiron or Chiron, where in Sagittarius, once they have their target, they will go for it. So most of the Sagittarius, they just have to point their goal into the bullseye, and usually they'll get that. So the keynote is usually, I see the goal, I reach the goal, then I see another. So with that ability for the art of archery and a bow and arrow, Sagittarius can do a lot of things, not only for himself, but for others also. He'd like to serve others.
So those are the qualities that anyone, if they're going to engage in meditation, can embrace. During this
because
period,
because
that's where the energies are. Go ahead.
Yeah, what do you call that? Zeitgeist? It's in the air. So during this month, it's there. So it brings down the specific type of energy for that month that relates to the Sagittarian qualities. And this can be utilized to enhance those aspects of our lives that are nurtured by those energies. What else? So that's basically part of the things about Sagittarius, but there, it's a fire sign. It's ruled by Jupiter, so it's a auspicious sign. It's a very auspicious sign. So because Jupiter is a it's the ruling planet. What else? Anything? Any questions you have?
Yeah.
And,
yes. I know that we only have about 2 minutes, so I do appreciate the time that you've taken with us, and to ask, with everything going on, speaking of meditation, and for those regular listeners, they're familiar, and we've, in months and years past, even gone through actual meditation techniques with you, and we appreciate that. And looking at all those qualities of the Sagittarius, those are things that anyone who isn't even not a Sagittarius might want to meditate on, just taking that quiet time, getting still, and allowing their minds to be open to these things. And the thing about meditation, I'm just recapping, you said, is to bless not just oneself and their projects and their loved ones, but to bless Mother Earth. And you have literally hundreds from around the world that meditate on this video stream at the same time. Real quick, for those listening, if you would like to join Dr. Mendoza, who will guide you in a video meditation tonight, you can go to pranichealingusa.com. That's PRANICHEALINGUSA.com. And that will guide you to how to join the video stream. And I've joined most months and will intend to be on even this evening because it is helpful. Meditation is so healing. With that last point, if you can give us 30 seconds, you know there's so much strife. And as an African-American myself, you can imagine with the recent verdict that went down in New York, we need healing more than ever.
I know. I know.
We have so much strife. You mentioned the word conflicts and calamities, that meditation.
Yes.
Give us 30 seconds, if you will, before you have to go, because I know you're about to start your meeting.
I think
how
we could
might
do some blessing, and I will do blessing with the group. to bless. There is such thing as we can't create chaos, but we could probably bless that there'll be calmer minds. Only with calm minds that will be able to get what we want. That's how I always believe it. You know, there are times when you have to be, there's severity that you have to do, but I think at this time we need calm minds and push through with the issues, how we would look at it in a positive way that will benefit all. It has to be a win-win situation. These conflicts that are happening are for us to harmonize it. We just have to harmonize when we're confronted with conflicts, either individual, either as a group, or as a race, or as a country. Once we have that, once these conflicts come in, there are lessons that all of us have to learn. At least that's how that's my take on it. And lastly, pranic healing deals with energy. So lastly, probably I'd like to have the group feel the energy of the full moon by putting both hands with the palms upward facing the sky and just put it there and say, want to feel the energy of the full moon. And for those who are sensitive, you will see there's some tingling energy. Would pulsate it and see we deal with energy. It's a universe of energy, and one of the things probably Daryl and I were saying is to discuss how it affects different parts of our lives, and one of these application of energy is into the full moon. Doing this spiritual energy in blessing the earth, as we bless the earth, we could bless our family, our loved ones, our life, our projects, our conflicts, and areas that need to be blessed. And I now that Daryl mentioned to me the situation regarding the thing in St. Louis and the one in New York, I think I will bless the whole thing that there'll be clarity, there'll be acceptance, and there'll be normalcy. Does that make sense to Daryl?
Yeah, absolutely it does, and that's why I wanted to mention that because there obviously are various facets and aspects, and we're going to talk about that some tonight, the various facets and aspects of this. Everyone involved, you know, may not have a clean heart or spiritual heart that is of a more moralistic basis in terms of their actions. However, there's power in love, and I believe that what I've understood is we must meditate to weed out the negativity through the power of good. Someone once told me the best way to get rid of weeds is to grow good grass. And so I think in those terms when I think about some of the things that you've said here even this evening, and you've said for, you know, the many, many years that I've been fortunate enough to be acquainted with you, Dr. Mendoza. So yeah. I did, the way, feel that energy when I held my palms up. So I want to thank you. I know you've got to be somewhere by 7. It's almost that time now.
Yes.
Looking forward to the next time you join us.
Yes.
Would like to close out with anything.
Okay. Thank you, Daryl. I like your power of good.
Well,
I like that.
Thank you, Dr. Mendoza, for taking the time out. And hopefully I got you just at 7 o'clock to get to your meeting. I know you're there now.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, well, bye-bye. To our listeners, we were just talking with Dr. Glenn Mendoza, master pranic healer. He's been on CBS, NBC, major media. He's recognized as one of the more advanced integrated doctors. And he does take healing and wellness to another level. Now, as I promised, without further ado, we're going to get into the topic. And as I mentioned with Dr. Mendoza, this isn't a hateful approach to this. This is just a direct approach, and that's what we've always been about. And our guest that we have with us tonight. Oh my gosh, we were blessed to have Dr. Mendoza join us. We're really blessed to have our next guest who's with us now. And it's been a while, in fact. I truly, truly miss having this particular guest because he's been engaged in research and some other projects for the last year. But he was gracious enough to spend some time with us, especially with what's going on right now, to share with us a perspective from a researched and intellectual perspective, but yet also from a practical perspective, being of African-American descent himself. Dr. Taylor is a psychologist. He's a multi-master degree holding, so he's armed with a PhD, two master's degrees, and he's done numerous research on this topic that we're talking about now. He's a critical thinker. His one book that you've got to read if you haven't, Restoring the Minds of Black America, touches upon some of the source of what we're dealing with now. Dr. Taylor, thank you for joining us on Progressive News Weekly.
Yeah, Clark, thank you so much for inviting me and for the invitation. I really appreciate it. It's good to be back on the air with you.
Dr. Taylor, I'm almost speechless after yesterday. And, of course, we've been planning for you to come on this particular week for some time before this even happened. So I can imagine you've got some real gold nuggets for us tonight. And anyone within an earshot is truly fortunate to be able to participate. I see we already have individuals that have got their hands up on the board here that want to comment. But I want you to open up the dialogue. Give us your perspective, because, of course, I have some script here that I wanted to ask you prior to this most recent yesterday event. Can you give us some perspective from
I'll see if I can pre-summarize it. One of the things that is going on is basically, and what we understand within the community, that is nothing new. It's basically, as some would say, as just old suit warmed over. But some of the issues that we're seeing is being put in our face in a very different light. With the incidents that are taking place, and now we have the police officers murdering our brothers and sisters within our community, and it's being televised. If we look at the history of the police in this country, we know that this isn't something that's new. The police began in this country around the 1860s, right before slavery, and then they really began to become more popular after slavery in 1863. They were just to watch out to make sure that the crops didn't burn down, to make sure that the livestock was taken care of, and if anything happened, they would simply sound an alarm if there was a fire. Later, after slavery, and they began to be individuals who would watch for blacks, maintaining the black code. If they would catch someone, if they would catch a black person, it was easy for them to be lynched, easy for them to be shot down, easy for them to be attacked without any repercussions or any type of consequences that they would have to endure. Now, before they were uniformed, these were just white men who would walk around in the community and keep black people in place. Now, if you look at the research, that's what their role was, to keep black people in place. Because although slavery was over, they wanted to make sure that blacks understood that they were inferior, they were not considered whole people. And so although they were free, although they could do what they want, although our ancestors were able now to live their lives supposedly in America as Americans, these individuals who were the officers, police officers, they had to maintain the control of our community by keeping our people in place. And so as we look at what's happening now, today, it would be very difficult to believe that an officer would kill a black person thinking that they would be in trouble. The reason why, and if you look at this, if you look at how often it's happening, it appears that there is there must be some type of culture that says that this is okay. Because if it was not okay, it would not happen as often. You know, firemen, we don't see firemen going around burning down buildings because that's not okay. We don't see paramedics injuring people because that's not okay. But we do see the police officers who are, and I love how KRS-One and Boogie Down Production, their question in the song was, you were put here to protect us, but who protects us from you? And so when we look at what's happening within our community, it's the same thing. The same thing is happening. They're still trying to control us, still trying to keep us in our place, and they're still showing that we can take your life and we won't have to deal with any consequences. And, you know, when I look at this, you know, the last time I was on, I think we were talking briefly about Trayvon Martin. Now, with Trayvon Martin, that was someone who was acting as if he was a police, someone who was taking care of a community. But now these next two situations we have, which are official police officers. However, when we look at all of it, it's still a color issue. It's still the black community is being attacked by the white community, which is a very unfortunate thing. But this is what's happening in our community. This is what we're seeing. This is what's real, is that the police officers have in their mind, somehow in their culture, it's okay to attack us. It's in their minds. And so even, you know, when I'm pulled over, you know, and I know the reasons why they pull me over, you know, either because of what I'm driving or because of the neighborhood I'm in, they pull me over and they question me. And one time when I was in California, I asked a police officer, why did you pull me over? And he told me, he said, well, because I saw you leaving out of the gas station, and so I wanted to just check up on you. And so because I was in California in a predominantly white area, basically I had no business there. And so they pulled me over. But it's the same message from the 1860s to 2014. And so this is what's going on within our community, this hatred against us being projected onto us. Not anything that we've done, but these are things that they are trying to get a message across to us. And some people have said this, that black life does matter. Which is the, in Missouri, that's what they're saying in Missouri, black life does matter. The same thing also in New York, but then also they're adding the issue, I can't breathe. And it's all of that being connected and tied together.
Well, you know, the whole aspect of I can't breathe has many connotations. And I've heard it alluded to, but not specifically mentioned, the one that I'm referring to, which is, as you're saying, as a black, I can't breathe, I can't inhale, I can't exhale, I can't move about freely.
Uh-huh.
I take it have an interesting connotation to just existing. And it ties
right
in with what you're saying. There's a hatred. And I mentioned at the very top of the program, right before I believe you were in the studio, this isn't a broad brush. So those who may be listening in the archives after this live program, this isn't meant to be just a broad brush that, you know, all whites are black-hating, you know, bigots. So I just want to put that disclaimer there. However, when you see this wave that's taking place across America, you can't deny the pattern. That's basic statistics 101, and it's increasing in number. So if this is happening in mainstream,
uh-huh,
only imagine what's not being televised. This isn't something
right
new. It's just greater in number now. And
right,
I think we're approaching a situation, well, no, Daryl, slap face on my own self. We are at the point where we were in 65 54, 56. We're there. When you can chart, we're there, fast forward to a modern technological world where we can turn on the television and see a black man obviously murdered. There's no question about it. And the sad part is that there is a certain mindset, and I'm going to turn it back to you, Dr. Taylor, on this, because this is where I spewed this, where I'm what generated this thinking, because you said there's a hatred. There's a hatred. These same officers that are killing blacks, and by the way, these are white men.
Right.
That's key. That's the key. These are white men. That same mentality is the same energy, which is why I was glad we had Dr. Mendoza on, because it is an energy, the same energy that were lynching blacks a century ago. It's the same energy in a different form. And the form that's being done now is even worse and more dangerous because it's within the boundary of what they call the modern day law. I saw something today, and I'll hand this over, where they're saying, well, it really wasn't a chokehold. See, I also heard something earlier in the week about, well, Brown should not have been in the store doing what he was doing earlier. Tamir shouldn't have had a gun. You see how they're desensitizing the killing. They step past the fact that the boys were killed, and they want to talk about the act that these children were doing, which certainly did not justify any type of killing, but they want to go right back back to something that they can hold on to justify the killing.
Yeah, one
Your
of the
thoughts.
Things that they do, right, so and with this is what they're calling justifiable homicide. And in doing the justifiable homicide, these individuals, and it's unfortunate that the things in which they're engaged in would cause a dialogue, you know. So then, you know, you need to look at both sides. You need to look at, you know, what one person did and what the other person did, the reaction, you know, the cause and the reaction. Look at all of that, cause and effect. But if you look at everything that's happening, you know, during the 30s and the 40s, there were lynchings, and the lynchings were annually around 30. They would calculate 30 lynchings that were recorded among black, you know, blacks were lynched. But if you look at what's happening today within our community, it's a very frightening thing, a very frightening thing. The difference that we're dealing with today than what happened in yesteryear is that then we had to watch out for the white racist oppressors. Today, we have to watch out for the white racist oppressors and also for those who are identifying with the aggressor in our communities. So psychologically, there is something inside of us, some of us, that says, I want to be powerful. I want to be great. I want to be something. I want to be white. And then what do white people do? They hate blacks in their mind. This is what some of our mindset is. And so while we're dealing with these issues of these, the white police, the white racist police officers and the white police officers attacking us in our communities, we have the same thing, us against us. And so there's so many things that are happening. And while all of these things are being recorded and televised, piece of this is, look back, and when history records this, when history records what happens, none of us are going down to the White House. None of us are talking to the president about, you know, when we look at all of this, we have an African-American president who's sitting in office while all of this is taking place. Years ago, the dream was if we can have a voice in the White House, if we can have a voice in government, if we can have a voice that can speak to these issues. But if you look at what's happening, it's, you know, it's a slap in the face, because now, you know, we have issues within our community, then we have issues with those outside of our community, And then we got issues with the one that the community put in office to deal with some of these things. And so all of these things are troubling within the community. When we look at this justifiable homicide, there is a picture that's being painted, a picture being painted that's causing the discussion, particularly with Mike Brown, also with Eric Garner. And so with both of them, they're painting the picture that these individuals have committed crimes. These individuals are criminals. These individuals were wrong. The police were upholding the law. The police were doing what they were trained to do. The police had the right to protect themselves. On both sides, this is what they're saying. And when this message goes out, it makes all of us targets. Every black person becomes a target. Because now all of us within black America begin to fit the description of a black man or a black woman. We fit the description. There was something else that happened in California when a black woman, a sister, was attacked by a police officer. And that didn't make as much media attention as the other situations. But this happens all the time. But they're painting this picture so America can see. They want America to see that these people are being murdered, gunned down by the police, but they've done something. They've done something. Now, and also there's another side to this, which is a sad commentary, is that not only the white police officers are disrespectful to black America, harass black America, but you have basically all nationalities that wears that badge and puts that uniform on and drives that car with the lights. They disrespect black America. And so whether it's a white police officer, a black police officer, Hispanic police officer, Asian police officer, or someone from the East, Middle East, they all have, there's something within the police culture, a spirit there that has something against black America. And, you know, but we do have some good police officers. You know, we do have, you know, those who are in there want to do the right thing, want to make sure that they're upholding the law and taking care of the community, but at the same time you have this undercurrent culture that causes individuals to have issues against black America.
You know, that is very interesting to hear what you're saying. I heard a term this week, underground economy. You know, there's a common thread in a few of these. One, the Mike Brown case, supposedly, allegedly, you know, because we still don't know that. We happen to have a video with Eric. We don't have a video with Trayvon. We don't have a video with Mike. A video with Tamir in Cleveland, which is an atrocity. But supposedly, of the ones that we've just described, and there's so many, many more, these individuals were supposedly trying to rob or sell things illegally. And there's a common thread there, which is trying to survive. You know, coming back to what I was saying about that I can't breathe being a metaphor. I just want to survive. And when you say that you have different races who are wearing that uniform, including black, now looking upon black race, regardless of the race or creed or gender that's wearing that uniform, they look upon the blacks as a certain image. It's that, as you said earlier, has been a picture that's been painted into the subconscious. I've had blacks say, I'm so ashamed of being black. I've talked to people who said, I'm just so ashamed of being black. About that. That's in your subconscious. You see, if you're a black cop, you may see a black child with a hoodie, and even though you may be a pro-black, but what's in your subconscious? What have they planted in your subconscious? Now, I'm talking your language now, doctor.
Right.
What's in your
subconscious?
Is there anything in there that just has a little inkling to say, I just wonder if this kid is doing something he shouldn't be doing? It's gotten, I think, to that point. You brought a great point up there. I just wanted to highlight that about you're not painting a broad brush that all cops are bad, but is it just something there that they've actually created, and the they, I don't like using that term, so I like to identify it, society, and then when we opened up, I suppose back to the founding fathers, and I've extended the program, so I want to get into that a little bit too, and I know there are some folks waiting on the line, but this goes all the way back, as you were getting into the 1800s, this goes way, way back to even the founding father in terms of the image that we've been portrayed as. And I love your book. It talks about that. This is my segue into, you know, how do you tie this back? And see, we've been at this a while, Dr. Taylor. I really appreciate you being a friend of Progressive News and joining us. Dr. Taylor, how much have we been through? We've been through Trayvon. I mean, we've been through this through the years.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing, and it always ties back to what you have in your book. It goes all the way back. Can you tie it into what you're restoring the minds of Black America? And you talk about the leaders, you talk about going back to slavery. Give us a glimpse of your perspective.
So, right. One of the things that I did with it, with my book, is that many people have said, you know, slavery was 400 years ago. You know, it has nothing to do with us today. I wasn't a slave. My parents weren't slaves. So because of that argument and because of that position, I didn't want to deal with that, to help people understand that what we're dealing with today happened back then. And that's why we're dealing with it today. So rather than trying to help them to understand it, I went to the Civil Rights Movement, which was a generation or two generations ago. And so that's more clear to us. And so I took it back to the Civil Rights Movement. One thing that I have in my book, in reference to some of the things that's going on right now, I have in the introduction part, I said, during the Civil Rights Movement, we were unified and steadily moving toward progress. Today, we're in complete denial of our collective pain, and as a result, we have erected unconscious defense mechanisms such as guilt, shame, and rage that has led to destructive behaviors against self and others. If we don't process through these emotions, we remain unaware of the suffering of our brothers and sisters in the African American community. So, one of the things that's happening now is they're triggering hostility within the community. So they're showing this footage nationwide because they know someone is fully aware psychologically what's going on within us. And so when they put these things up, that causes us to have rage and anger, rather than for us to look inside and say, you know what, it's time for us to get together because we've already lost so much. We've already lost our leaders. We've already lost our organizations. We've already lost our communities. We've already lost so many of our children. It's time for us to get together. But rather than doing that, because there's a defense mechanism that causes us to react with rage, they trigger us. And then once they trigger us, the cameras are back in our community and showing, look how angry these people are. Look at them tearing up their own communities. Look at how violent they are. Look at how evil they are. Look at how destructive they are. And so once again, they're painting this picture of us. So before the verdict came out in Missouri, they'd already called the National Guards. They'd already put people in place to control us. And so also in putting these people in place was also a type of trigger, because most of our minds today, some of us were there when the National Guard, you know, came to our communities, when the police had the fire hoses and the dogs to bite us. Most of us were there when the billy clubs hit our heads. And so to see this military and this police presence, that's going to trigger us again. And so once again, that justifies their attack of us. That justifies them doing what they will with us and marginalizing us and sectioning us off. So all of this, if you look at all of it, it doesn't just happen. It's structured, it's planned, and it's a game that they're playing with us, and we'll keep playing the game with them. But it's not until we deal with what we've lost that we can deal with these other issues.
Dr. Taylor, what I want to do, I don't know if anyone has ever heard of Scarborough. He has a program that comes on in the morning on MSNBC. And he's a conservative, and he has this little conservative show that comes on, Morning Joe, it's called, Joe Scarborough, MSNBC. I encourage you all to give it 30 seconds, not much more. It's not worth your time. But I happened to be on my way out the door for work, and I just caught him giving a reflection. Now, this was on Monday prior to the no indictment charge. And I just want to play 30 seconds, I think it's 90 seconds, of a tyrant that he went on. Now, this was after, for those of you that caught this, if you didn't, you've got to, because it was a proud moment for me, when the St. Louis Cardinals came out of the locker room with the hands up, no shoot symbol. It reminded me so much of the Olympics from 68, I believe it was. And so I just want to play a little set. Now, this is a white conservative, and this is his mindset here. And I just want the listening audience to listen and folks to weigh in, because what you just said, Dr. Taylor, ties exactly with what this white man's mindset is. So just listen in. Here we are. Okay, he says there's so many black people to embrace. Let me turn this up. Enough. Did you catch any of that?
Yeah, I did.
This is a white conservative. You know, you caught some of the highlights. You know, that was enough for him. He started out saying, how can you dare say that these folks are heroes? How can you dare? Give me your feet on your thought on this. And this is an example of many who think like him.
Yeah, so this, and as you introduced this segment, with, you know, the Olympic athletes who won the medals, it is somewhat similar to them, because what happened, we actually today, hindsight, we honor them, we applaud them for their their stance for Black Americans, for Black people, especially during the 60s and what we had to deal with in this country. And so they stood with their Black fists held high. The other side to that is that when they came back to America, they were shunned by the Black community because they were shunned by the white community. And so no one wanted to touch them. It was difficult for them to get employment. It was difficult for them to have friends, to have any type of social relationships. And so that was a challenge. What the players did, the St. Louis Rams, was also a challenge as well. And so their message wasn't necessarily, I don't think it, how I'm seeing it, wasn't necessarily, you know, the police officer shot Mike Brown. Their message, I see it as being more of a Black national thing. It's something that Black people have to deal with and Black people are confronted with. My hands are up. Don't shoot. I'm Black. So that was the message more than, and so this guy, Joe Scarborough, is talking about Mike Brown, but it's bigger than Mike Brown. It's bigger than just St. Louis. It's bigger than just that incident and that verdict. It's bigger than that. But he wants to focus on, you know, and the picture that the media wants to play and present is that Black people are attacking us. Black people are cruel. They're burning up their neighborhoods. They're attacking our police officers. The police officer did the right thing to shoot them and to kill them. So that's the message that they're giving. That message puts a target on all of us. And so with the St. Louis Rams holding up their arms like that, making that stand, it was a daring and challenging stand. They may lose everything they have. They may lose everything because of the network that they're on, because of who's paying the salary, because of who are the biggest supporting fans, because of the sponsors on the network for the games, all of that. But ultimately, it goes all the way back to the fact that we are being lynched and no one's giving us any respect. No one's treating us with any value. So it goes back to that. You know, if you don't want to go back to slavery, we can go back to Emmett Till, 1954, I believe. We can go back to then, when he was savagely beat and murdered. Mm. And they took these men to jail, to court, rather, took them to court, and they walked out of the courtroom knowing, even before they went to court, they had nothing to worry about. And so their hands went up, and I would tap into their unconscious and say their hands went up because of what happened to Emmett Till. You know, and then if you look at the history of St. Louis, Missouri is somewhat, it's supposed to be a northern state, but looking at the Missouri Compromise, they wanted to have the same rights of slavery as the southern states. They're a northern state. They're not a southern state, but they wanted to enslave blacks and take advantage of blacks and misuse and mistreat blacks, just like the southern states. So for a whole year, they petitioned to have the right to enslave and mistreat blacks, and they got that opportunity. And the message to that, there's so many things. Dred Scott, you know, the Dred Scott decision, Dred Scott left Missouri, he was free. Then the judge heard about it. The judge said, no, if he's been a slave, he's always a slave. So the message to us is consistent. It's consistent. And that was the fear and the threat of the Civil Rights Movement. The Civil Rights Movement said, no, look, treat it with respect. I'm going to be treated like a man. And the women said, I will be treated like a woman. And you will respect us as a people. So Malcolm began that mess. And they got rid of him. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he was getting, you know, allowing them to attack him and to spray him and to pull his skin off with water and the dogs would bite him. He did that for so long, but then he said enough is enough. The moment he said enough is enough and he started dealing with some issues that the government was doing, like the Vietnam War, they had enough of him. The Black Panther Party grew up and then held on to the same message that Malcolm X had, that we are a people and the people need to be empowered. And so Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seale, they knew the law. J. just as well as the law knew the law. And they couldn't deal with that because they were empowering us. And we were demanding respect. And so they got rid of them. And now what they're doing, they're trying to take, well, they're taking the minds of the people. The 1860s, they're taking them back to somewhere between the 30s and the 50s, the whole Jim Crow era, when we had to bow our heads and cross the street and walk on the side or walk in the street in the gutter to let the people pass by, where we had to let them go in front of us and wait till all the whites came out of the store before we were served. And so now they're painting this picture of us, that these people are violent, they're mean, and they destroy their own. So this is the message that they're showing. These are the messages they're showing us, and they're showing it to us in black and white. Now, there are, as I said before, there are black police officers that harass blacks only because they think that's how you ought to be a police. Some of them. Some of them will be disrespectful only because they think that's how you have to be a police. But that same police officer, white or black, will not talk to a white person, for the most part, in that way because of the culture of society. And I would say, I would also say, because of what we are allowing. We're allowing it. One thing that you said with your with the other guest that was on, you all talked about getting rid of negativity with good. And that's how we have to do it. That's how we have to do it. Because as long as we are, they want us to react like that way. They're expecting us. When you look at what happened in Missouri, they're saying to us, I expect you to act ugly. I expect you to prove that what we've said about you is true. I expect you to act like you're less than human. I expect that. And so we're going to prepare our military to control your animal behavior. And then they give the verdict. After they set everything up, they set it all up, then they give the verdict, and then the reaction, and then the response. In essence, I knew they were going to do that. That's the response of America, America media. I knew they were going to do that.
But in addition,
yes,
they purposely did not have police presence in the areas where they wanted to target the destruction. Purposely, and that,
mm-hmm,
that theme came across again and again from those there in Ferguson. They said, when the reporters asked, well, why do you think this is happening? And the simple answer was, well, there's no police over here. So you're right, it was purposely set up. In fact, I believe those cars that were turned over were placed there. I don't know, by the police, chief of police, we need to put a car, give them a car to turn over, give them a car to burn.
Yeah.
Why would a car be sitting isolated by itself?
Right.
So I agree with you 100%. They expected it, but not only did they expect it, they, as you said earlier in this dialogue, not only did they expect it, but they set it up to occur.
Right.
You're absolutely, there were no police there in those communities.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. One piece I want us to go ahead, Dr. Taylor. I'll hold my thought. I have it written.
Part of having a police car there and then showing them burning the police car and flipping the police car, that's showing that a type of disrespect for the law and saying that these people don't even respect the law. So it's not about that rage and that pain and that hurt that's inside, because that's how people react. When people are hurt, they react that way. But if you don't educate people to let them know that hurt people act that way. They see us as being rage and vengeful people. They see us as being mean and nasty, not that we're hurt. And so they wanted to make sure that they show that about us.
Well, I want to get to our listeners. We have several folks that are just chomping at the bit to speak with you, Dr. Taylor. And express a comment or a question. And I see we have New York. Well, this is interesting. We have New York. We have Cleveland. You know, two areas that personally have experience with this shameful wave pattern. I'll start with Cleveland because you mentioned the whole southern piece of Missouri. Well, now this is, you know, filtered over into our northern states. I mean, Cleveland, you know, one of the states, and I don't know the history, and I'm perhaps you do, or one of our guests do, who are going to join, one of our callers are going to maybe shed some light on it, but I don't perceive Cleveland as being a southern state in the north, like Missouri, very obvious. Indiana is another one you and I have talked about in the years past. So I would like to just get a comment from, we have Iris. Okay, this is my own sister. I've been meaning to ask her about this. Iris, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Iris.
Hi.
Calling
hi,
from everybody. Cleveland. I'd like to get your input if you can. You have a question or a comment?
I do. I don't have a question. I do have a question, but the question can keep because I think the answer might have been given off. I missed the first half hour of the show. I have watched the situation unfold here in Cleveland. I watched the situation unfold in Ferguson and then New York. I had to find a way to look beyond what appears to be happening. The pain that many people are feeling behind the deaths of these people is tremendous. I know it is here. People are speechless. But I truly believe that this is a much bigger picture. I see you just spoke about cars being placed, things looking like they might have been pre-planned, premeditated. I believe it is. While all this is going on, by the way, Eric Holder was here today. Do you all know that?
No, I didn't know.
Yeah, to talk about the disproportionate amount of violence on the part of police in the city of Cleveland. Yeah, this is deep. So the federal government is here. The Justice Department is here today. While we're dealing with the pain, the anger, all these emotions, what's going on? What is really going on? What's going on in the world? What's going on in our economy? Are we facing a government shutdown? I hear a date, December 11th. There is a much bigger picture here, not to downplay the significance of what's happening to African Americans in this country. It's real, but it is just a cover. Unfortunately, the mindset of people in a position of power and money is that everybody is expendable. And in their mind, few people have to go so that we can get our agenda met. There's an agenda, I believe. There's an agenda, and it is far greater than we could ever imagine, unless we're enlightened and know. The fact that Barack Obama, is he the lame duck? Is he the one, he's a man without power, so to speak. He has no Congress that supports him. He's being bombarded on all sides, which to me is ridiculous because the man, he can't run again. He's out of office. There's no reason to fear him. But fear is why all of this is happening.
Iris, let me ask. You're there in Cleveland. You have friends and colleagues and, of course, family members, and I'm concerned. We have family there, who are, black male youths. What's the tone? And then I want to go to New York. I don't want to miss, because I see Ron has been waiting for a while. But give me an idea of the just the tone that's there in the black community.
My take is that people are frightened. People are frightened. Young men are frightened. It's strangely quiet here. There was word out, I don't know whether it was on the street or if this was actually a message that was sent via media or some other method, technology or otherwise, that Ferguson people were on their way here to help us out. meaning, you know, we're getting ready to go through the same thing. So, yeah, people are very pensive right now. There's no activity. The young man's funeral was this past Saturday. It was without incident, but there was a lot of passion, a lot of emotion at the funeral. And a declaration and a promise that this must end. Now, what that means in terms of actions on anybody's part is yet to be seen. Yes, everyone, young men are scared.
And that might be one of the objectives as well, as Dr. Taylor said. Dr. Taylor, before we come back to you, I want to bring Iris. Thank you so much for calling in and ask you to, you know, if you like, stay with us a little bit. I might want to roundtable back around. I want to get Ron on from New York, because it's just interesting that, you know, we happen to have, listeners from the areas that have been highly involved in this most public wave. Ron, what is your perspective coming out of New York of this situation?
Well, I have to compliment all of your guests. I want to do that first and foremost. Thanks for having me and bringing me on. I appreciate that from you, Daryl. But I side with your guests, and the last one, Iris, she really hit a nerve there. Because right, she is right. There is an agenda. And, you know, it is based in the economy. The economy is weak. The economy is very weak. And you see, all of this prejudice or racism, you know, makes the country fascistic. Not that it was ever a democracy, because it wasn't. But that is what we're taught in school. And, of course, we, you know, suck that in and we get brainwashed about that. But she's funny. She hit a nerve there, because the economy is fragile. So they have to keep this antagonism going between white and black. That's important for this system, because that's how they got on their feet, so to speak, is divide and conquer, because blacks and whites as indentured servants were attacking the government when things got very oppressive, so they had to separate us. So now that's been going on for several centuries. You see what I mean? Since the 1600s going forward. So therefore, yeah, there is something there. Because, see, it's capitalism. The mode of production is capitalism. Profit. Profit at all costs. So it really, you know, actually oppresses white workers too. But since they think of themselves as having an advantage, or white supremacy or white privilege and all of that stuff, that intoxicates them, you see. But it's coming to a head now, because as we saw here in New York, a lot of the people who were in the protests were white. A lot of people in the protests were white, and I think that has something to do with the rise and fall of the Occupy Wall Street. You see, so that's been hitting whites between the eyes. So, yeah, they have to, and, you know, to literally change the law from a chokehold to a put-down hold. I mean, wow, that's, you know, that's like insanity. You know what I mean? So, I mean, when they have to stretch that far, you can see something is really embedded, that they're trying to keep going. See, trying to keep this kind of hostility going. Keep it going. Heat it up. Because we need this distraction. The government is saying, we need this distraction, you see. So, yeah, the government is controlled by the super wealthy. I think I've said that before. That's where the government comes in. That's why, you know, what Cuomo should have done, he hasn't done anything. He was supposed to enter into all of this and, you know, put another prosecutor in instead of the DA, you know, that was there in Staten Island. Because he knows that the DAs have incestual relationships with police chiefs. I mean, we have to know that. You see what I mean? We have to know that. And I don't even think de Blasio picked, you know, our commissioner. You know, I think, you know, people do that because they want a certain mindset. They have to maintain a certain mindset. And the DAs should be put up in charges of let's see, I'm trying to think of the word, malfeasance, because each of them denigrated the victim and pushed up and decorated the criminal who did the act. See, that's the way I see it. But it has ties deeply to the political economy. And we're not going to get anywhere really substantively until capitalism is removed. But there's a lot of strategies and tactics that we can do. And that's what we have to move to, understanding and using strategy and tactics. And, you know, because it's absurd for us to be voting. Let's face it, it's absurd. I mean, we know that politicians need the handout from super wealthy people to maintain their jobs. So they're beholden to them, not to us. And I mean the working class across the board, whites as well as blacks, because the industries have gone out of here and said bye-bye and tough. You don't have a job, tough. And that's to everybody who works. That's,
you know,
what
it's very
interesting to say.
That you mentioned it. I'm going to swing it back to Dr. Taylor. It's interesting that you said, on the coattail of what Iris said, it's this great synergistic conversation dialogue we're having here. And I want to sweep it back to Dr. Taylor, because you talked about, you know, some of the potential solutions. We noticed when they decided, they being us, African-Americans, who said, no more, let's not even deal with Black Friday. All of a sudden, people got serious. All of a sudden, you had a president that came out and said, okay, I want action. When you start talking about the economic aspect of it, and Dr. Taylor talked upon this to some extent as well, that this goes back beyond to a child being murdered in St. Louis, a child being murdered in Cuyahoga County, Cleveland, or a father of six being murdered in Staten Island. This goes beyond that, as Dr. Taylor said. It's something far bigger, and in terms of the solution, it's probably have to be far bigger as well. Ron, thank you for coming in. We're going to continue this dialogue in a subsequent program. We're going to do a series. I don't know when Dr. Taylor will be able to join us again, but we're going to continue this. Dr. Taylor, I want to loop it back to you. What's your thought on all of this input? I think it was great and synergistic from our callers. Thanks to Ron and Iris.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate Iris and Ron and their comments. You know, it was right on point. And then, you know, there was also statements about politics. I think Ron said something about what do we vote for. I remember hearing from H-Rap Brown some time ago, and he stated that for us to have the right to vote, it is not necessarily giving us the right to vote, but it's the right for us to vote for who they want us to vote for. The only, you know, when I look throughout history, you know, we've only elected and voted for, I can only think of two people that I know of right now, that's Adam Clayton Powell and Harold Washington. Adam Clayton Powell in New York and Harold Washington in Chicago. But everyone else were, you know, they would give us like they would do a child, you know, the kids who don't want their vegetables. Do you want to eat your carrots or your broccoli? You know, the kids, they want chocolate, but that's not a choice. And so many things, you know, have to be done. So as we galvanize and come together as a people, then we can begin to start putting things in place. I think that the greatest thing that happened to America is Black America. In order for America to learn how to love, to forgive, and to heal, Black America has to rise up and be Black America and not try to be someone other than who we are. Many of the things we're talked about, Iris talked about it, there's a much bigger picture, a lot of things that are going on. You know, I looked briefly I talked to you, I think, last year, Daryl, about looking into being a magician and just to study what they do and how they do it, because if we study what they do and how they do it, then we can see what's happening in the world, particularly in America. When you look at the illusionist, as Iris mentioned, is what's happening. The illusionist wants you to look to the left because something else is taking place on the right. And so as long as we're looking at the left, we're not paying attention to what's happening on the right. But then some of these things are just right in our face. You know, they're killing us, and they have somehow, you know, stirred up the beehive and have us killing each other. But at the same time, they're bringing in, you know, what they would call them immigrants. And they're trying to find out how can we bring them in and not let them do what we want them to do. And so now, rather than them being illegal aliens, now they're undocumented citizens. And I don't know about the other states, but in some of the Midwest states, they're allowed to have driver's license and be undocumented. They're allowed to have employment and be undocumented. They're allowed to receive health benefits and be undocumented. They're allowed to have all of these benefits that Black America is still trying to get. But they're giving it to all these undocumented citizens. And so these are some things that are taking place. And as they are moving or attempting to move us out of the way, I think that when we come together and realize what's really happening, then we can make some difference. We can make a difference. You know, one of the things that I see them presenting with us is that that we're practicing a form of anarchy, in that, you know, we don't listen to the government, we don't follow the government, the police, and the authorities. We basically are disobedient. When that takes place, what they want to do then is to bring in martial law. One, you know, and I'm not sure when they're going to do it or how they're going to do it, but I think it's left up to us to decide if they do it. You know, when we come together and we decide, you know what, we need to come together as a people first. We need to deal with our issues, and we need to get ourselves together. Some of the things that happen is they watch us disrespect us. Like with the music, you know, our music, you know, the movies, all of that. And so they look at these things, and they allow us to disrespect ourselves. And so then they come in thinking it's all right to disrespect them because this is a disrespected people. But somehow we bought into that lie. We bought into it. The only way to deal with all of these issues is, you know, is love. Love is definitely going to cover a multitude of sins, cover a multitude of the illnesses and all the things that we're dealing with. But in dealing with love, we have to deal with the pain that we have. Iris mentioned that when she talked about the pain and how the people are speechless. You can see the people who aren't speechless and who are yelling and screaming, that's out of pain. You know, in psychology we call, and some of you may notice it as well, it's called a form of mania. It's a form of a manic reaction. And most children do that. When children are depressed, rather than the child, especially adolescent males, rather than them sitting with their, you know, looking sad and droopy, these are those who are actually going to be the bullies. They're going to fight. They're going to involved in drugs. They're going to be very aggressive and very angry because they're depressed, because they're hurting. So that's what hurt people do. Someone said, you know, that hurt people are going to actually lash out and hurt people. Like when you put a puppy in the corner and you continue to mess with that puppy is going to lash out. It might snap at you. But that's what happens with individuals. When we look at ourselves as the people, just when we look back to where the civil rights leaders left us, that's where we need to start. We need to let they left us or where they left off is where we need to start. Going back to that, getting us back together, getting the community strong again, because they're coming to the community the same way they did in Africa. They weakened our community by taking our children. They took the children out of Africa. And now they look at Africa and wonder why is it so undeveloped. Because you took you took the children. You took the youth. You took the energy. You took the life. You brought over here to America. You built up America, and now you want to take our children, take our energy, take our life again. And for some of us who are educated, some of us who are advanced, and some of us who are very knowledgeable and profitable and benefiting in our field, some of us have left the Black community altogether. And I think, Sarah, you said it earlier, that some of us don't even want to acknowledge being Black. You know, there are some of us, you know, who have And so they'll go down to the ancestry. They'll say, you know what, my great-grandfather was white. You know, they don't give us all the details of how the great-grandfather was white, but they tell us my great-grandfather was white. Or my, you know, I'm half Indian, or I'm part Indian. That's why my skin color is like this. You know, very few people would say, you know what, I'm a proud African. I'm a black man in America. My ancestors were slaves, and we fought for our freedom. And I'm proud to be free. I'm proud to be a descendant of slaves. Very few are willing to say that. But there's so much power in that. There's so much power in that that it is very fearful for us to come from nothing to be where we are today.
Dr. Taylor, I thank you so much for your insightful introspection. I want to encourage, I want to make this about resolution. And what I'm getting from this is a theme, and the theme is not new. It's just one that has to be resurrected. You
uh-huh.
mentioned it. We must come together as a people. We're a powerful people. In fact, our adversaries know our power better than we know our own.
Uh-huh.
When someone made a call last Friday to say, don't shop, trust my voice, we put some fear out there.
Right.
I'm going back to what Ron said. We put some fear there. So what it's
uh-huh.
about now is coming together in one accord, in one motion,
yeah,
to save ourselves. It's a small planet now. It's about tribal survival. The tribe of
uh-huh.
African right now is what we're talking about. And right now we're being attacked. We're being attacked to the point from so many angles where we could be looking at extinction in the next century. Our children, our boys are mentally being destroyed. Our boys are wearing their pants down. I've seen it get so bad they're wearing their pants at their thighs. They're having to walk slew-footed and waddle like a penguin.
Uh-huh.
For everyone on this call, because I don't believe I have anyone on this call who's under 30, you couldn't have convinced us 40 years ago if someone said, we're going to degrade the minds of your children, your black boys who would become men, so bad, we're going to castrate them mentally that they're going to
uh-huh.
wear their pants on their knees and waddle like girls. If someone had told us that, they'd be like, we'd be like, I don't think so. And a significant populace of our young men, the ones who are not in prison, who are not educated, who have lost hope, that's what they're doing right now. So we're being attacked physically, being killed in the streets. We're being attacked mentally, our young men. Our men
uh-huh.
are supposed to pay for our society. So we've got work to do, and I don't want this to be about another talking head program. Everyone that participated this evening had input with regard to solution. And Dr. Taylor, I thank you so much for some of the things that you said in terms of what we really, truly need to do. We've got to educate ourselves to know who we are. You talked about we need to understand introspectively who we are from the youngest
mm-hmm.
of us, from the youngest of us. And that is where I have my hope. Because you see, right now in this movement, for the first time, and Dr. Taylor, I'm going to let you close on this one, I'm seeing young folks get involved. There is my hope. Because
uh-huh.
when the movement took place in the 60s, these were young folks, Malcolm and Martin, and these folks were in their 20s and 30s.
Right.
And I'm seeing that for the first time, and we've talked about this in the years past. Where are the young folks? We now
uh-huh.
finally have college campuses protesting. We haven't seen that in 40 years? Talk with me about that as we close out, Dr. Taylor, and what some of the general high 100,000 foot solutions might be as I close out with our bumper tune.
One of the solutions, one of the things, and basically it's the Sankofa principle. The Sankofa principle from Akan in Ghana is in order to move forward, we have to look back and protect our future. And that's the only way it's going to happen. We have to look back to see what worked back then for us. What worked for us back then? How did we get through all of that we went through? We have to go back and get that stuff and move forward. All of the principles, all of the situations, all of the structures and the strategies that our people used back then, it's the same thing that we have to use today. And one of the issues that's happening with our youth, we have to make sure that our youth understand, you know, what's happening to them, because they're targeted. You know, if you're going to get a tree, you know, if you want to kill the tree and keep the tree standing, you destroy the roots of the tree. You know, you destroy, you know, that part of the tree where all of the growth is possible. And that's what's happening. So our youth are caught up in rap music. Now, there's nothing wrong necessarily with rap music, but when we listen to the lyrics, the lyrics are destroying the mind. And so it's no longer, you know, like the, you know, Arrested Development, they had some songs out. Public Enemy had some songs out. KRS-One, Boogie Down Production, they had songs out. All of these were considered conscious hip-hop. But now the message that's out now was basically how to take advantage of women, how to kill and how to destroy another person, and how to get the best drugs. It's all destroying our community. And so what we have to do is look at a different, you know, use a different angle and develop our mind, develop our soul, develop ourselves internally.
Wow. Oh, I thank you, Dr. Taylor. I want to continue the dialogue. There's so much. This is life or death for not just a community, but for a nation and for a culture and bringing it home for a race. I really think we are there. Dr. Taylor, how can someone reach out to you, get your book? Is there a website? What's the reach information?
My book is available at basically anywhere where books are sold. We have it at Amazon.com, AfricanAmericanImages.com, also BarnesandNobles.com. And then my email address is emtaylor, N-U-P-E, that's Newt, at Yahoo.com. But the book is available everywhere that books are sold. If you don't see it on the shelf, the book distributor can actually order the book. But I do want to thank Iris from Cleveland and also Ron from New York for their very powerful comments in which they shared with us today. And also thank you, Daryl, for the opportunity to share this information with your listeners.
Well, again, thank you. For those of you who joined us late, we have been having the pleasure of talking with Dr. Eddie Taylor, respected nationally, researcher, author, teacher, and humanitarian. His book, Restoring the Mind of Black America, is a must-read. And he's been talking with us today, armed with a PhD in psychology and two master's degrees, and a wealth of experience in life on how we can truly restore the mind of Black America. We must ground this movement in love.
Yes.
And love will help us to come out of this situation. You can believe we will be revisiting this very soon. Dr. Taylor, you know I'm going to be reaching out. I know you have a very busy schedule. But as soon as we can reconnect, I'd like to have you come back, and I'd like to take this to another level. I'd like to have next program go viral.
Yes.
On everyone out. Next, everyone you know. Don't want 20 or 100 on the airways as we have now, or in the archives, which we get hundreds. We want to going. About crabs in a barrel. Oh, if I listen to Daryl's program, then I won't listen to my other friends. No. You've got to come together. Theme that I heard Dr.
That's
Taylor
right.
mention. We must come together. So when we come back, and we're going to give at least 2 weeks' notice, everyone on this call, really, hopefully Dr. Taylor will be able to anchor this program. Thank you again. Someone about Progressive Weekly. You can catch the program in the archives beginning tomorrow morning. Again, take some of the Ron, of course, Dr. Eddie Taylor. We thank Dr. Mendoza as well. Next, meditation. Pray for peace, for insight, strength, and the will to make a difference. God bless you.
All right. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Are you trying to find a beginning? Something just to hold on to? Always know that love will find a way. Is it hard, this life you're living? Does the world seem so unkind? Don't you worry, love. The truth.